Krishna's explaining transcendental knowledge, and he's explained how it is so purifying. The transcendental knowledge doesn't mean that one gives up one's work, because there's a tendency to think that people who desire material things, they're working and working and working and working and working and working to get the fruit of their work, as we say, to get some result. People work so hard. So we say this is foolish. Why? Because the primary principle of knowledge is to know that we're souls, and eternal souls. And when, how can the eternal soul become satisfied in the realm of matter, in the realm of the temporary, in the realm that everything is shifting and changing? Because he's eternal. So knowledge, one would think, would stop one from engaging in fruitive work. But one would tend to think that it would stop one engaging in all kinds of work. What is the use of working if one isn't getting the enjoyment from the fruit of one's work? So Krishna has explained that the qualities of someone who has knowledge and still works. In 22 he says he does not envy, he's steady in both success and failure, he's satisfied with gain which comes of its own accord, he's never entangled while performing actions. So this is a way to work based on knowledge in such a way that one doesn't become entangled in the reactions of work. And then in 23, the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. In other words, the work doesn't cause him bondage, but on the other hand, his work brings him to this completely spiritual platform. So his consciousness is spiritual, so therefore his work is spiritualized and it brings him to the spiritual platform. And then in 24, which was the last verse we read, it explains how a person who's fully absorbed on the transcendental platform of transcendental knowledge and ultimately in Krishna consciousness, he will achieve the spiritual world. It is not by abstaining from work that one will achieve the transcendental realm, but working. And why? Because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute, that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So the offering of the work and the fruit that comes from the work becomes spiritualized fully because of his consciousness being absorbed in on the spiritual level and ultimately in Krishna consciousness, because the work is being done for Krishna, his activities are being performed for Krishna, and therefore the fruit of his work, the results that come from his work, will be offered to Krishna because everything is done for him. Just like the bank teller, he accepts money, he gives money, but it's all done on behalf of the bank. And therefore he's not liable to the reactions from his giving or taking the money. So it's because everything is done for the bank. So similarly, everything is done for Krishna, then everything one does in Krishna consciousness will become spiritual. So Prabhupada, we didn't read it. I don't think we read any of the purport in that. I'll just read a little, explaining why this concept is so important. Prabhupada explains in his purport how activities in Krishna consciousness can lead one ultimately to the spiritual goal is described here. There are various activities in Krishna consciousness, and all of them will be described in the following verses. But for the present, just the principle of Krishna consciousness is described. A conditioned soul entangled in material contamination is sure to act in the material atmosphere. And yet he has to get out of such an environment So we have to act materially if we're conditioned souls, but yet we want to get out of our material situation, so it's a puzzle. How do we get out? How do we act? We have to act because it's our nature. So how can we act in such a way that our actions do not entangle us further, but rather liberate us from material entanglement? So that's the puzzle. Because you have to act. You can't be inactive. Because how are you? You can see, just try to be inactive. So just trying to be something means you're acting to be inactive. So you, how can you be inactive if you have to try to be inactive? You have to act to be inactive. So you can't be inactive. It's not possible. The hands must move. The body will do this or that. What will you do? So it's a puzzle then. How to act in such a way, because inaction isn't an option. So how to act in such a way that our activities don't entangle us and therefore bind us. So Prabhupada explains, the process by which the conditioned soul can get out of the material atmosphere is Krishna consciousness. For example, a patient who is suffering from a disorder of the bowels due to an overindulgence in milk products is cured by another milk product, namely curd, yogurt. The materially absorbed conditioned soul can be cured by Krishna consciousness, as set forth here in the Gita. This process is generally known as jagya, or activity sacrifices simply meant for the satisfaction of Vishnu Krishna. So that's basically what Krishna consciousness means. It is taking our activities and using them as a sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna. And then naturally, if the activity is sacrificed for Krishna, the result of the activity should also be used for him. The more the activities of the material world are performed in Krishna consciousness, or for Vishnu only, the more the atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. By complete absorption means the consciousness becomes absorbed in Krishna, and everything becomes spiritualized based on that. And therein lies the solution to the problem of how a soul who is active can be in the material world with a conditioned nature and his activities won't bind him. And the answer is to be in Krishna consciousness, or do one's activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And the more our consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, or acting for Krishna's pleasure, then everything, the whole atmosphere, becomes spiritualized by complete absorption. Meaning that the more our consciousness is absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, then the more everything becomes spiritualized. So this is so easy to say, and it's easy to say that I'm going to do this work for Krishna and then completely forget about Krishna. And this brings us a result that doesn't truly satisfy us. So the consciousness must be, it's somewhat an imposition on the consciousness, unless one has love for Krishna or obedience to Krishna. So then Krishna, in the next eight verses, 25 to 32 or so, he's going to explain different kinds of sacrifices that are coming from Shastra, and he's going to explain them in a perspective, because he's explaining a very high principle here, the principle of acting in Krishna consciousness. But naturally someone says, well the scriptures, the Shastra also says this, or what about this? Or what about this? Isn't this what the mind always does? It always tries to find a way out by thinking of a good reason, fully legitimate and justified reason. So in text 25, Krishna explains yogis who worship the demigods by offering different sacrifices to them. And some offer sacrifices in the guard of the fire of the Supreme Brahman. So So some people worship the demigods as separate from Krishna, and some worship him, connected to Krishna, as he is the Supreme, and they are just parts of his body, of the body of the Supreme. That's the deva to worship is, can be done like that, and one is much far better than others. And an example of someone who worshiped the demigods as part of the Supreme is Bharata Maharaj. Then next, some, the pure brahmacharis, unadulterated brahmacharis, sacrifice the hearing process, because everything is sacrificed. That's the point. If we don't sacrifice for another, we do everything, we have to act, so we'll do everything for ourselves. So here's another a type of sacrifice. Some sacrifice the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. Everything becomes sacrificed. All tendencies to enjoy become sacrificed to control one's mind. And others, the regulated householders, sacrifice the objects of the senses in the fire of the senses. So it's a sacrifice. See, the brahmacharis, the householders, can sacrifice to advance. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as an oblation into the fire of the controlled mind. So this is the yoga system. The system before was brahmacharya grihastha, which means vanashrama system, and the one before was the system of sacrifice and worshipping the demigods. So these are different possibilities of sacrifice, because sacrifice we must. The alternative to sacrifice is to sacrifice everything for our own selfish pleasure. Our whole life we can work and do this and do that and buy that and do unlimited things to satisfy the body. So we're sacrificing our work for the body in that way. So we can't live without sacrifice. But this is talking about a sacrifice to something other than who we are and for the sake of enjoyment. These are different processes, Vedically sanctioned processes for sacrificing different things. So this is the Patanjali yoga system, sacrificing of the breath, pranayama, into the fire of the controlled mind. For the purpose of controlling the mind, one uses one's breath. Because sacrifice means we take something and offer it for a higher principle, a higher purpose, a higher person. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities. Like, yes, very severe austerities. Starting tomorrow. And some by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. So these are different sacrifices. Here's a good one for you. Such sacrifices, for example, under the Chaturmasi vow, the candidate does not shave for 4 months. How would you like that one? I like a huge, huge beard. But then you also have to do other things also. You have to not eat certain things, and you have to get up very early, and things like that. So all these, and the studying of the Vedic literatures is a sacrifice, too. Sacrifice of all the other tendencies we have. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint, pranayama, to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing. And at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. What are those, the three, what is it? Kumbhaka, Rich, what, anyone know the different? Rechaka, the holding of pranayama, Kumbhaka is the breathing in and out, different names for it all. So all these things, all the practices, are viewed as sacrifices. And all these performers, this is 30, summing up all these different sacrifices, because Krishna really hasn't explained their purpose, but he's explained all these Vedic activities as sacrifice. Austerity, study, pranayama, astanga yoga, controlling the mind, and different offering of the sense objects. So all types of sacrifice, just as the sacrifice that he previously described was work as a sacrifice. These are different other types of sacrifice. So he's explained already the purpose of work as a sacrifice. Now what are these? Purpose of these sacrifices. All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions. There's no petty selfishness here. So that cleans one of sinful reactions, and it brings detachment. And having tasted the nectar of the results of sacrifice, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere. So it moves one towards the spiritual realm. These types of sacrifices, they're not necessarily spiritual in and of themselves, but that moves one towards the eternal spiritual. Krishna has explained that work is a sacrifice. Work for him is a sacrifice. Work for Vishnu is a sacrifice that makes everything completely spiritual. So these type of sacrifices, Krishna isn't criticizing them in one sense, but he is criticizing them in another sense. He's not criticizing them because they are steps and move one towards the eternal, but there's still a gradation of some types of sacrifices are better than others. Some are inherently completely spiritual, and some move ones towards the spiritual. And according to the type of sacrifice one performs, one will get one result or another result. 31. Oh, best is the Kurus, but the point is that everyone sacrifices. And this is what, if you want to use your life, you have to consciously perform sacrifice. So in 31, Krishna says, oh, best of the Kuru dynasty, one cannot, without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life, and what then of the next? So you can't be happy in this life. Your current life is ruined without sacrifice, and your future life is also ruined without sacrifice. And in the contemporary world, is this the mood? Is speaking about sacrifices required, sacrifices required, sacrifice required. What is the mood? It's not that, but what is the mood?
I want to enjoy,
buy, consume, and live for the moment, enjoyment, and if you don't have enough money, put it on your credit card and go into debt, but somehow or another, enjoy. And Krishna is saying, well, you can try it if you like, but doesn't bring happiness either in this life or the next life. In this life, there is so much frustration, and in the next life, you go downward. So one without sacrifice won't get any good results. In other words, acting in a regulated way for a higher purpose. Very much against the way the people think nowadays. 32. All these different sacrifices, types of sacrifices, are approved by the Vedas. And all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will be liberated. Purport. Different types of sacrifices, as discussed above, are mentioned in the Vedas to suit the different types of workers. Everyone can't do exactly the same thing. Everyone works and sacrifices according to his nature. Because men are so deeply absorbed in the bodily concept, these sacrifices are so arranged that one can work either with the body, with the mind, or with the intelligence. But all of them are recommended for ultimately bringing about liberation from the body. This is confirmed by the Lord herewith from his own mouth, knowing them as such, as steps on them towards the Supreme. One will be liberated. It's born of different natures, different capacities. One will step in one way or another, but one must step forward is the point. And if you know the purpose of all of them, then one is liberated. Now, he's going to put them in an order. So far, he's not said one is better than the other. He said they all bring you towards the Supreme. In 33, he's going to explain something else. Which one is better? O chastiser of the enemy, the sacrifice performed in knowledge is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions. After all, O son of Krita, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So here's the purpose of the sacrifice, is to gain transcendental knowledge. And what is transcendental knowledge? There are different levels of knowledge. First level is that we're eternal, that we're not our body. That the body gets sick, it gets older, it gets diseased, it dies, but the soul isn't actually affected by any of these vikaras, sadvikar, any of these different changes of the body. That's the first level of transcendental knowledge. And the second level of transcendental knowledge is that we see the Supreme, that there is a Supreme. If we understand that Supreme is impersonal, then we just try to become one with that Supreme, that qualityless Supreme, the seeing the spiritual nature of everything. That everything is ultimately spiritual in nature, and I am ultimately spiritual in nature. So people who have this realization see themselves no different from anything, and they even will give up their individuality. And then above that realization is realization, I'm still eternal, and we see the Lord as everything and everywhere. But how is he everything and everywhere? He is there as the Paramatma. He is in every atom. He is between every atom. He is in everyone's heart. And yet I am an individual. And he is an individual. So this is the next stage, and the ultimate stage, or the next stage is Bhagavat Tattva, understanding the Supreme Lord as a person. Like the Paramatma is a person, and he has qualities, but he doesn't have personality. Just equal in every circumstance. It's like the judge sitting on the bench. He's not supposed to exhibit his personality. He has to exhibit his neutrality in everything. But yet the judge is a person, or rather, better stated, there's a person who acts as the judge. And that person who acts as the judge, in this case, or the person, the Supreme Personality, who acts as the Super Soul, is called Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, and the Supreme Aspect of his personality is Krishna. So he is Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Sayam. So this is all transcendental knowledge, different levels, angles, permutations of transcendental knowledge. So all these type of sacrifices brings one to transcendental knowledge, and the sacrifice performed in knowledge, knowing what you're doing, where you are going, is better than the mere sacrifice of material possessions without knowledge. After all, O son of Prita, all sacrifices of work culminate in transcendental knowledge. So if we sacrifice one level of knowledge for a higher level of knowledge, that is best. So that's what Prabhupada explains in the purport, that real knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness, the highest stage of transcendental knowledge. Without the elevation of knowledge, sacrifices are simply material activities. So if I'm performing some yoga, and I may be performing yoga on the physical level, on the same way as another person is performing yoga, but one person may be doing it for improved health, another person may be doing it to gain mystic powers, and another person may be doing it to feel the separateness of his consciousness from his body. Another person may be doing it to control his mind so he can focus it on Krishna. So there's different levels of knowledge or realizations that one can be performing these activities in. So the best one is the ultimate one, as Prabhupada is explaining, is Krishna consciousness. It is better when the end is knowledge, Prabhupada ends that purport. Now, how to get this transcendental knowledge? Is it just by doing the activity that will automatically the knowledge will just come to us? Well, if Krishna wants, he certainly can do that, but that isn't the standard process. The standard process is described in text 34. How to get knowledge. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadakshantite jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. Just try to learn the truth. Tadvidi. Tat, all these different sacrifices that have been described. Vidi, try to understand them. Patipatena, pranipatena, by approaching a spiritual master. Pariprasnena, submissive inquiry. Sevaya, by the rendering of service. So, these are the points in the approach, inquiry and service. Upadekshanti te jnanam. They will initiate you into this knowledge. They will give you transcendental knowledge. Jnaninas tatvadarsana. How will they do that? Because they are, these self-realized souls will give you the knowledge because they are tatvadarsana. They have seen the truth. So here's Prabhupada's translation. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, that's pranipatena, and render service unto him. Self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Inquire from him. Inquiry is the tadvidi pariprasnena sevaya. Submissive inquiries and service. This is the process. So we'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport here. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of the Supreme Succession from the Lord himself. So he said this is what Krishna advised at the beginning of the chapter. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidu. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of the Supreme Succession. In other words, one can't manufacture one's own methodology. The Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of foolish pretenders. The Bhagavatam says, Dhamman tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one on the right path, excuse me, to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master, and when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this first book, blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind towards the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. What a nice purport. And then what will you learn through the process of submission, inquiry, and service to a bona fide spiritual master? Yaz Gyatva Na Punar Mohan. Once knowing this knowledge, Na Punar Mohan, never again will you become illusioned. Evam yasyasi pandava yena bhutana seshani drakshas yatman yato mai. You will see that all living entities are in me. The verse. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living entities are part of the Supreme, or in other words, they are mine. So the illusion is what? That we are separate from Krishna. So once one gets transcendental knowledge from bona fide spiritual master, then one understands something that one will never forget. And that is that one has a relationship with the Supreme. We are part of Him, and we belong to Him. We are part and parcel. You asked that question, didn't you? Did you ask that question? Part and parcel? Why do we say part and parcel?
I was just thinking that.
Oh, well, you asked it mentally, and I'm very, very... I have that ability, you know. Why do we say part and parcel? I can't remember. No, because part, we can be part of something, just like the drop of water is part of the ocean, for example. But what does the concept parcel add to the definition? It's a unit. It's a unit. So similarly, not only are we part of Krishna, and then like a drop of water is part of the ocean, and then you put the drop back in the ocean and it loses its individual dropness. It's no longer a drop. But the concept of parcel shows that we are part of Him, but we're an individual unit, a part of Him that's always an individual. What do you think about that?
Is it a translation of a certain term? That's the term?
Part and parcel?
No.
I don't know. Do you know?
That something that Prabhupada devised as a term.
Part and parcel? I don't know any Sanskrit for it.
Simultaneous oneness and difference.
Huh?
Simultaneous oneness.
Yeah, but she's asking a little bit of a different question.
Fragmented parts.
But that fragmental part isn't quite the Sanskrit term. But fragment means part. Fragment means the same part as parcel, the same meaning. Yeah. A fragment means, because you don't think of a drop of water as a fragment of the ocean. No, it's a fragment means a unit, something that's broken off. But the part means that's the sameness. Let's hear a little bit of the purport here. This is in the second paragraph. For want of sufficient knowledge, or for lack of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion. And therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from him. The bodily difference of the living entity is maya, or not fact, not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna. And his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called maya. So this is what we struggle with. And when we say, Prabhu, you're in maya, this is what we mean. That you're not seeing yourself in relationship to Krishna. And what is your relationship to Krishna? It is that you're Krishna's servant. So that is specifically the function of maya. To give us a sense of identity, a sense of existence, separate from from a relationship with Krishna. We feel lost, we feel alone, we feel powerful, we feel this, we feel that. But we don't feel our relationship with Krishna. That is the function of maya. Someone says, who are you? What do you say? What do you usually say? Who are you?
Pratik.
And then you say, what else do you say? And where are you from? And then you say Bombay or something. Because we think of ourselves in terms of the body and mind. Remember one time, where were we, like, training? Oh, we were in Vrindavan. There was this old hippie lady. I asked her where she was from. And she said, when? So it was a really interesting answer.
I remember that.
Huh?
It was recently.
It was a good answer, yeah?
Anyone?
Yeah, I thought that was really clever. That's what when Chitraketu's son died, Harshashoka, the son of Chitraketu, died. When Narada Muni brought him back to life, he said, "You can come back into your body. Can't you see your father and mother are crying?" And the child, the soul, who had left the body, who had come back in the body, replied, "Oh, my father and mother are crying. Which ones are my father and mother? I've had so many fathers and mothers. I've had, these are my fathers and mothers in my last life, I've already left, and I've also had dog fathers and mothers, and monkeys, and dolphin fathers and mothers, and what other kinds are there?
Pig
fathers and mothers. Yes. What other kind?
Cows.
Cow fathers and mothers. That's a lot of bull. Oh, that's, excuse me. That's a different kind of sense of humor. So we've had to, but when we think like that, that we, just for a moment, think that you have no relationship with your father and mother other than the bodies, and you've had so many fathers and mothers. What does that make you feel? What do you think about that?
Everyone's related.
Huh?
Everyone's related.
Yeah, you know, but then when you go home and your mother wants to feed you, and you say, when are you my mother? Yeah, now you're my mother, but I've had so many mothers. I've had big mothers. I've had not only you. What do you think? If you actually realized that, what would you do? Just imagine how try to understand, Prabhupada would say, how that would affect how you would deal in this world. If you actually had realized what Krishna is saying. Yeah, and this is the whole issue of the Bhagavad Gita. The whole issue of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna didn't want to fight because he saw that these people, thousands and millions of people, were going to be killed. And Krishna, and he didn't want to fight. And naturally we identify with that mood. Who'd want to see the great reservoir of blood that was shed in the arms and legs and the dead bodies and everything? And Krishna just said, even though it sounds right, you're speaking like a fool. Even though superficially what you're saying is so nice, so kind, so compassionate, but what you're actually saying, the concepts that are underpinning what you're saying, are the concepts and knowledge of a fool. You have the knowledge of a fool, which means you don't know anything. Because he who is wise, who has knowledge, neither grieves for the living nor the dead. That you're eternal, you're a soul, and the soul can never be burnt or dried or cut or killed. It's eternal. So this whole concept, bodily concept of life, is illusion. It's not real. So that means that we're living in illusion most of the time. Most of us, most of the time. Or maybe we could say all of us, all of the time. But we don't want to be so bold. But we live in illusion. Only thinking of our temporary relationship with the body and things connected with the body, and neglecting who we are forever. So therefore, Prabhupada says in his purport, we are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By Maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living entity as Krishna's eternal servitor cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya, that which is not. The living entities are separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, so units, individual units, spiritual units that are simultaneously non-different from Krishna, and different from him, different in the sense of being individuals, non-different in the sense that we are eternal and spiritual entities as he is an eternal and spiritual entity, he being great and we being insignificant. The living entities as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme have a purpose to fulfill. Now think about that. That you, as an eternal soul in relationship with Krishna, have a purpose to fulfill. Now what question comes to your mind then?
What is the purpose?
Yes. What is the purpose? Or one could put it more personally even. What is my purpose? What is my purpose in life in relationship to Krishna? Having forgotten that purpose, since time immemorial, the living entities, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Forgetting Krishna, we are placed within so many other relationships. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service to Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Because if we don't have a, if we have a impersonalist guru, we will find out, yes, we're not the body. We will find out that we're eternal. And then when we're free from illusion, we become Krishna. We become the Supreme. So Prabhupada is not fond of that philosophy, because it kills the serving spirit and the ability to get to the spiritual world, to the Loka Vrindavan. So that's knowledge, but not perfect knowledge, not complete knowledge. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter of all living entities. And giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Muktir Hitvan Anurupa Surupena Vyavastita, from the 10th chapter of the 2nd canto, explaining that what is liberation? It means that when we are situated, Surupena Avastita, situated in our actual position, our natural position, that is the free position. Free from what? Free from the artificial limitations of the body and false conceptions. Liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna. That is Krishna consciousness. Okay. Any questions? Short questions? It's already, what time is it? I think my watch is a bit fast.
8:13.
Any questions?
So basically, sacrifice for Krishna, is there anything that you do for Krishna, like yourself, like say buying books, instead of buying novels, you buy Prabhupada's books and just sacrifice for Krishna?
If your consciousness is to, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure, then they're going to purchase the book with Krishna's money that's in your hands, and then sitting down and reading the book and then applying it, and then whatever, everything becomes for Krishna's pleasure. Everything is done as a sacrifice for him. Because what are you sacrificing? You're sacrificing your money, you're sacrificing your time, your consciousness, your energy, because you could be doing so many other things. So you're sacrificing to do those other things for Krishna's pleasure, sacrificing your mental abilities, intellectual abilities, your physical abilities. You could be doing so many other things. But for Krishna, but to move towards Krishna, you're not doing those things, but you're doing the things that will please him. So yes.
How about like chanting, someone's chanting for to become himself happy and Would that be still sacrificed for Krishna, or?
Well, who is it sacrificed for?
Like say someone is under the conception that he, if he chants, he'll become happy.
Yeah, so who is it sacrificed for? Sacrificing the whole Krishna for me? So the transcendental, see, it's one's knowledge that makes it right, one's consciousness that brings it to its perfection, that makes it Krishna consciousness. So naturally, in the beginning, we do everything with ourselves in the center, naturally, even the Krishna conscious activities. But they act as medicine too, so they'll cure it. Especially the hearing. Hearing and then serving. Because we can't expect to be perfect all at once. Before you can do anything perfectly, you have to do it imperfectly. Even walking. You can't, little baby pops up, stands up, and then starts dancing with full gracefulness. No, you have to be very clumsy and tripping and falling down. And you see, when the mother and father see the child just, you know, taking one step in and tripping, do you think they say, "What a foolish child"? Look how foolish this child is. Can't even walk perfectly. Or when the baby first said, "Baba, mama," and tries to say some sentence, and the parents are so happy. Because before you can speak properly, you have to speak improperly. Before you can have perfect consciousness, you have to start moving in the direction of imperfect consciousness. But if we don't start, we never move forward. Yeah.
It's always interesting to me with this last couple of verses we read that Krishna in this instance describes as the essence of transcendental knowledge attained from the spiritual master, that one will have this vision to be able to see all living beings as part of him, as opposed to as the essence of transcendental knowledge describing that one will realize Krishna specifically that Krishna gives birth as the essence of...
As opposed to you come to Braj and herd the cows or something?
Well, not even that, but just say that you realize God or you realize yourself.
Okay. You'll see that all living beings are part of the Supreme, or in other words, they are their mind. So just the way that Krishna phrases it, it's interesting.
Specific.
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah. So what concepts are embedded in the way that Krishna has described it?
Seeing things, and specifically other living beings, in relationship to him.
Ato mayi, they're in me. You'll see asheshani, bhutani, all living entities, asheshani is all, drakshashi, you will see atmani, in the Supreme, ato, but you'll see all living entities in the Supreme or in me. So in relationship to Krishna. So this can also be understood on different levels. So Prabhupada explains it on if you hear from the proper spiritual master, you won't get deluded into saying that Krishna is saying that all living entities are me. Because certainly the impersonalists can read it like that. all of you are all me, we are all you and me, we are one. Shanti. You, everything is one. But that's not what Krishna is saying. Because you have to always fit what he's saying now into the frame of reference of what else he has said and what he will say as well. Yeah. Do you want to make any other comments about that?
No, it's just that, you know, I find the emphasis interesting. When it comes to this point of the culmination of sacrifice and transcendental knowledge,
yes,
you get that from the spiritual master. And having attained that, what is it that Krishna emphasizes? That you maintain that knowledge, you will see all living beings as part of the supreme, in other words, of the mind.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes.
Point of culmination.
Yes. Yes. What specifically interests you?
Well, that Krishna is focusing on that. You'll have a specific vision of all the other living beings around you.
Yeah. Yes. Is that green book, is that the 11th canto? Second volume, or is that the first volume? Something interesting in this regard. This is also a bit on the Jnana side, but this is also what I'll read now, is a bit on the Jnana side, but it's quite interesting.
Yeah.
What Krishna says in the 29th chapter of the 11th canto, after he's explained the whole Uddhava Gita, he says, with a pure heart, one should see me, this is 12, the Supreme Soul within all beings and also within oneself, to be unblemished by anything material and also present everywhere. That's Krishna. Oh, brilliant, one who thus views all living entities with the idea that I am present within each of them, so that's different, that's not within me, but he's with them. But this is the one I meant. Not this is actually it's Saint Krishna within everyone. But anyway, I'll read it because it's so interesting. Until one has fully developed the ability to see me within all living beings, one must. So, and also, if you see someone as part of Krishna, so that's also another way of seeing Krishna within someone. In other words, you don't see them as separate from Krishna, so you see them in relationship to Krishna.
Mm.
So he says, until one has fully developed the ability to see me within all living beings, one must continue to worship me by this process with the activities of his speech, mind, and body. By such transcendental knowledge of this all-pervading personality of Godhead, one is able to see the absolute truth everywhere. Freed from all doubts, one gives up fruit of activities. Indeed, I consider this process, using one's mind, words, and bodily functions for realizing me within all living beings, to be the best possible method of spiritual enlightenment. Anyway, that's what I was thinking. Didn't exactly fit in, but... Okay.
I think the thing that says...
Yes.
About the thing about it that makes it challenging for me is that it challenges that point, are you ready to see other living beings different than the way you're seeing them, the way you're seeing them with the body, and also we're spending so much time interacting with other living beings,
actually.
In, you know, exchanges of relationship and exchanges of communication, learning, so forth, are you ready to interact with the living beings around you with a different perspective in who you are?
Well, yeah, so you can't separate the two. Before you can interact with others on that level, you have to interact with yourself on that level. Are you ready to see yourself like that?
Starts from there.
It does, seems to. Okay, that's something to think about. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.